So I want to say welcome to everyone. Thank you for joining us at tonight's event on the benefits of public financing in New York State. I am Lisa Genn. I'm a counsel at the Brennan Center for Justice, where I work, among other things, on issues of money and politics, including the campaign to enact public financing for New York State. Before we go any further, I just want to extend a special thanks to the Overbrook Foundation for their generous support for tonight's event. And say thank you also to the Open Society Foundation for their funding of all of our work in money and politics. Before I introduce our illustrious panel, we're really in for a treat with these panelists tonight. I want to invite Fritz Schwartz, my colleague, to come up here and just give some opening remarks on why this is such an important issue for New York State today. Fritz is an expert in the issue of public financing, particularly New York City's program, and he has formerly chaired the New York City Campaign Finance Board. So we're privileged to hear from him tonight.
So thank you. Is this on? Or?
Yes.
Is that okay? Yeah. So first, welcome to everybody and thank you for coming. The Brennan Center tries to have important events on important subjects, stimulating events on important subjects, and this is certainly one of the most important subjects that can possibly be dealt with, trying to address the influence of money in politics. We have a chance to get something done in New York State this year, which people will talk about. And the hope is that New York State adopts the New York City model, which is a model a little different than most financing that you hear about in elections, most public financing. It's a model based on matching small gifts. It started in 1989 with a one-to-one match on $1,000. Then it was improved to a four-to-one match on $250, and today it's a six-to-one match on $175. Now, as with any other public financing system, if you join it, you then have to limit the size of the contributions you accept, and you have to limit the amounts of money that you spend in an election. But the aspect of the New York City system, which is so powerful, and Michael Malvin has done some very good research on that, as we have, the aspect that's so powerful is that when you have a match on a relatively small amount of money, it vastly increases the number of people who get involved in the political system. For example, if someone can only give $25, that produces for the candidate $175 because there's the multiple. So it's a great way to attract people who otherwise might not give money in elections and otherwise might not participate in elections. So it's a system which can be copied, should be copied. There are elements of the system that should come along with it. Nonpartisan governorship by the board that I was privileged to chair, the board that oversees the elections, strict enforcement, which may frustrate candidates sometimes, but which is necessary in order for the public to believe their money's not being wasted. But the key to this is the matching system. We have a chance in Albany. We are trying to organize people to help develop additional support. Governor Cuomo has said he's for it. We need to keep pushing on that front, and the at least part of the legislature's for it. So we need a public movement to support change which increases the involvement of people in politics so that it's not big money that controls, but it's people that control. So again, thank you all very much for coming, and I hope you enjoy the evening.
Thank you very much, Fritz, for those remarks. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce our panelists for tonight. To my immediate right is Professor Michael Malvin, who is the Finance Institute and a political science professor at SUNY Albany. And he's going to speak tonight to us about the New York City public financing system and the potential benefits of implementing a system like it for New York State. So we're very privileged to have an expert on the system here with us tonight. To his immediate right, and speaking immediately after, is Dr. Hazel N. Dukes, who is the president of the NAACP New York State Conference, and she will be here to discuss the ways in which public financing can support a broader civil rights agenda, and we want to thank her also now that we have the opportunity for all of her collaboration with us on our voting rights work as well, so we're very honored to have her with us tonight. To her right is Michael J. Pietro, who is the Executive Vice President of the Nonpartisan Nonprofit Committee for Economic Development, and he'll be here to speak on kind of the business angle on public financing and why it is good for the economy and why businesses do support it and should support it even more. And to his right will eventually be Professor Zephyr Teachout of Fordham Law School. She's joining us a little bit late, but we'll be glad to hear from her on corruption in political campaigns and how public financing can help us to address those problems. So thanks again for joining us. We're, as I said, we're in for a treat tonight, and without any further ado, I'll turn it over to Professor Melvin. Take a moment to...
And I need to... to be able to see my slides so I know what I'm going to say.
No, you're not.
Okay.
Just
a mouse. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So I'm going to talk about what a public matching fund system such as the kind Fritz described for New York City, what it could mean for New York State. And I'm going to base it on several years' worth of research that we've been doing at the Campaign Finance Institute on the role of small and large donors in state and federal elections. And we've also done a lot of research on New York City, including a major law review article that I co-authored with Peter Brusser, who's here, and with another of my colleagues, Brendan Clavin, that just came out on New York City as a model for the nation and states. So I want to really start with a fairly obvious point that this is no surprise to anybody, that political finance is dominated by a handful of donors who happen to be richer than normal and give a lot of money. But in a typical state, about two-thirds of the money comes from either organizations, political action committees, or from people who give $1,000 or more. In New York, it's even more, it's 78%. So the bulk of the money is coming from people who give large amounts. And in the typical state, only 15% comes from small donors, people who give, which we're defining as $1 to $250. In New York, it's 6%, which is toward the bottom. And then again, in the typical state, only about 1.5% of adults give anything at all to any state candidate. In New York, it's less than 0.5%, which puts it at the absolute bottom of the But again, the point is not about New York. It's all states. It's really low. So, you know, there are obvious questions that arise. Clearly, this raises issues of political equality, political power. The $1,000 person is not your average person. You have a system that's clearly not representative. This is all fairly obvious, but the question is, so what? Or should it? What can you do about that? There's been a fairly standard strategy that a lot of people in the reform world have talked about for 30 years or so that I'll describe as let's try to restrict or restrain the people who have a lot of money, and that's the way to get a more equal system. Clearly there are problems with that approach, given the Supreme Court's recent rulings, but I would describe the way that it worked over the years, even before the Supreme Court, even before Citizens United, in this way. This is the way it's basically worked. Now, instead of looking like this, the lid is off. But, you know, this is a strategy that does not, by itself, empower people to come into the system. So if this doesn't quite do the job, the question is what might? And we've wondered, and I will now say more than wonder, now we argue, that it's really time to shift basic paradigms, to shift the way you look at things. And this, by the way, is what I believe the effort to bring the system of multiple matching funds for small donors into New York State, what that's about. It's an idea of try to change the system by bringing more people in, empower the many, and in fact that doing that can actually change the fundamental balance. A lot of people are skeptical about that. They say, oh gosh, how can a lot of people, can you actually get enough people to participate so that you really can change the balance? And there's a lot of skepticism out there about this. So we said, okay, this is really great rhetoric, but does it work? What does the research show? Well, it turns out that at least we decided to look at that, and here's what the answer is. Yes. Now, let me explain why, or let me explain the evidence. And by the way, this is not on the one hand, on the other hand. This is a simple answer. Yes. Let's look at data from New York City. We can do this for any election you want where there's multiple matching funds, but we chose the most recent, 2009. And we looked at city council elections because in the mayoral race, obviously, you had one self-funded candidate who dominated that picture. So let's look at city council elections. Your typical city council member is representing a district that's as big as your typical state legislative district. These are big districts. They're running races with significant money. And Fritz described what the matching fund system looked like, 6-for-1 for the first $175. And as in any public financing system, candidates have a choice. They can opt in or opt out. If they opt out, they don't have spending limits and so forth. Okay, well, what does it look like for people who choose not to participate in the system? Chances are that their sources of funds look pretty much like state legislative candidates all over the country. 15% from small donors, 2/3 from people who get 1,000 or more, and then non-party money is not a big deal in New York City. Those are your non-participating candidates. What about participating candidates, people who choose voluntarily to get into the system? It turns out that this multiple matching funds produces different incentives. It's not just for the donors. It's that the candidates now have an incentive to go find people who will give them money. If they can find somebody and give $175, that's worth more than a $1,000 donor. That's worth $1,225 or $50, whatever. So let me show you what it looks like. In this chart, I'm only going to show you the private money, because comparing private money to private money tells you something about the incentives on the candidates. Okay, instead of 15, it's 37% of participating candidates' money comes from people who are small donors. Now, how important is that smaller donor money to the candidates? For that, what we did was took the public matching funds and we matched it up with each of the donors. By the way, these donors we aggregated the contributions from each donor so we could have the total amount that came from each donor to each candidate. And then we assigned the public money based on the contributions that stimulated the money. They had to live in the city, it had to be up to a certain under 75. And here's what it looks like. This is the value of the small donor to the participating candidates. Instead of 66% of the money being here and 15 here, it's totally reversed. It's 64% here, quadruple the original amount, 16% there, 1/4 the original percentage. And that's all coming from the multiplying effect of the incentives. The candidates can now have a reason to go out and talk to a different kind of donor. You'll hear more about that later. but it is worth their while to ask somebody, not just for political vote reasons, but it's worth their while financially to ask somebody for $25 or $50. So they do. Their behavior is different. So that's pretty impressive for New York City. The results are clear, the research is clear, we just published them, as I said. Would they transfer? So what we did to find out is we took the 2010 candidates, we took all of the contributions for 2010, and we lumped them together in the same way we talked about, so we can aggregate the amount per donor, and we said, what would happen if you put certain new policies in effect? All right, here's where the money actually came from New York State. 6% from small donors, 47% from non-party, 31% from that. These two together are 78%. This is 6%. The governor in his State of the State address said he would like to see lower contribution limits. Here's what would happen if you got contribution limits that were equal to the federal limit, which is 5,000 per full cycle. It would bring this up from 6 to 9%. There are other good reasons for contribution limits. This is not an argument against contribution limits, but it is telling you that contribution limits by themselves will not do much to alter the basic distribution of power. They have to do with corruption or the appearance of corruption, but they do not address this issue. What if you did put in a matching fund system that looked like New York City, 6-for-1 match for the first $175? Here's what it would look like. Assuming the same donors, assuming that only the donors who gave in 2010 would give. This goes up, this doubles, right? No, it doesn't double. This goes from 6 to 9 to 30. It's 5 times as much. These go down. 30% is pretty good. But that's assuming that there's no incentive effect here, that nobody comes into the system because they're told that their money would do something. And we all know, A, New York is the absolute lowest donor participation rate in the entire country, and New York City is only a little bit above average. It's not way off the top like Minnesota, which is 4.5%. New York is about 1.75%, which is pretty good, but it's not. Here's what it would look like with new donors. It's, a total reversal. It's 54% instead of 6%. Not quite as high as New York City, because you still have non-party money, you still have in here. But 54% instead of 6%. Okay, let me recap. Really simple recap. This is what it is. This is what it could be. It's really straightforward arithmetic. Took a lot of work to do the donors, but this is really straightforward. 6% of 9 times as much. But that can only happen if there's some kind of an incentive system, a public matching fund system.
Thank you very much, Professor Malbin, for really illustrating for us in such a compelling way the difference that we can see in New York State from enacting a system like New York City. It's so helpful for us to understand how that would work. And now I want to turn it over to Dr. Dukes.
Good afternoon. I guess you wonder why I'm here. Let me tell you, give you greetings on behalf of Benjamin Todd Jealous, our president and CEO of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, known to most people as NAACP, celebrating its 103 years. The history is from lynching to now, what do we do with the political system? Thank you, Professor Mellon, for putting it out. I have looked at the New York City model, and why did we join in this? Well, Marv Green will tell you I've been around the bond too many times. On this issue, fighting for inclusion. I met someone outside, and I said to her that she said, you must be Hazel Dukes, and I said, yes. And we had a small conversation, and I said, well, I'm just not going to talk about African Americans and Latinos and Asians. I'm going to include women, because just a few weeks ago, it was 40 years after Shirley Chisholm, and we saw that clip, we saw the film, and we look back at 40 years from since Shirley Chisholm and, of course, Bella Abzug and Geraldine Ferraro, where are we now? When you look at Congress and when you look at the legislature and when you look at county government. And it's all about money. It's all about money. I said yesterday when Liz and I had a conversation, some of the brightest minds want to serve in public. Want to be public servants. I never wanted to be. I wanted to be the agitator. Right, Mom? Kick the butt of those who get elected and don't do right. But there are so many young people, and this is across the board of what we say minorities that include women and the growing population of Asians in our city, and just to come here, people who have come here with good minds, love this country, and want to serve its people. I believe that public finance is the way to go. I heard someone say that the governor said he would like to see this. I'm glad he said that. He said the same thing about redistricting. And he didn't do it, so I'm not waiting for that. I think the people movement will get him to do it. And so that's why I'm here this afternoon, to join the movement. It's about time in New York State that we began to see public finance. There are too many people out there waiting for the wings, and some who are there, who cannot, they cannot serve their constituents because they have to go out begging for money to compete. And so they do lose the benefit of the constituents that they serve. I was in Albany last week, matter of fact, last Tuesday, and we were knocking on the doors, met with the Dean's fellow about the funding for school and all of that, and he kind of, you know, looked up in the skies. I was talking to him, you know, like, I don't know what you're talking about, you know, the people that fund me and give me money, they're not talking on the same language that you're speaking on. And so it is noted. So the NAACP with the Fannie Lou Hamer project, you know, the story of Fannie Lou Hamer, the woman who turned the Democratic Party upside down, they have looked at this same issue of funding. And so in 2001, the NAACP at our national convention, where we adopt resolutions that is the policy for us, adopted a resolution calling for all of its branches, and we have thousands of people scattered across this great country of ours, to look at and support voluntary system of full public finance for elections. The resolution was supported by the Fannie Lou Hamer Project, which called for reform that not only served to reduce corruption, utter perception of corruption in the political process, but would enhance political equality for all. And I think that's where we need to be in America today. We don't need all these PACs. I mean, I get sick. I have to turn off CNN when I hear about the PAC, how much Ron is spinning, and where Gingrich is now, and where Santorum, you know, closing down. Not that I think they're the best candidates, but they should have a fair chance to speak to Americans. And we should, we the people, should make the decision who is the best candidate. So I think that to have equality for us as citizens, to really think that our vote really counts, is for men and women to be conscious that if we give our $25, if we give our $175, or whatever, that we are buying in because we believe that he or she is the best candidate, will represent the quality and life of what we all want. And it goes back to me for education. It just breaks my heart to have to fight to see what we are doing to public education. I'm not against charter school if any charter people are here. But public education, what we are doing to our children, and yet we talk about competing in a global market. And so to me, it's a corruption system going on in the political process for just the basic right of public education and access to health care. And so the NAACP has supported Fair Election New Act, Congressional Public Financing Proposal that was introduced in the 111th and in the 112th Congress. The high cost of running, when I moved from Nassau County to New York City, I moved in the Lou Rudin building on East 68th Street. And lo and behold, I was reading the New York Times one Sunday before I moved from there. They said that was the place that every politician go. It was the highest district zip code in New York City that gave money to candidates. I said, I'm in the wrong damn place. Let me get out of here. And so I soon made my way to Harlem. But, I mean, just the idea that a zip code can say who can be the spokesperson for us, because they can go into that zip code and get thousands of dollars, while you and I might only have the 175, but still want the same thing that that group want and deserve under the Constitution. And so the National Voting Rights Institute has called public finance one of the best ways to ensure that meaningful political participation is available to all Americans. And so NAACP in its founding and its mission and goal statement is that every American should have the process for political, social, education, political rights. And so that's why I'm here tonight. That's why we're supporting the Brenner Center and its massive movement. And I join and ask all of you who are here tonight, become ambassadors with us as we take this movement. Let this train run over the governor and anyone else that get in our way, because we really need it, and we need to set the tone. People look at New York City as the model for other places. And so if we can do it here, they can do it anywhere. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dukes, for those passionate remarks, for the call to action to all of us here, and for highlighting why this is such an important piece of the civil rights agenda, and also for tying this in importantly to all of the other issues that all of us and other folks in this room care about, because of course, fixing the foundations of the democracy, fixing the system by which people are elected to serve us, is also the first step toward fixing whatever policy problems we see in our state and in our country today. So thank you so much again for those remarks. So before we turn over to Mike Peter, our next panelist to the right, I'm actually going to make a presentation that that builds on and really dovetails with both what Professor Malvin has said about empowering small donors, and very much with dovetails with what Dr. Dukes has said about who we're empowering and how we're giving power to people's actual constituents instead of a couple of zip codes on Manhattan's Upper East and Upper West Side. And the focus of the presentation will really be how public financing enhances diversity in our political process. So in order to do that, you'll have to give me 1 second to cue. Okay, so just bear with me one moment while I actually get the technology to cooperate with our plan.